This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. Today's date is the 15th of October. It's just gone 25 past five. I'm Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conquers 3. And I'm here with my fantastic co-host, Henry Viola Hare, who today, folks, is no longer in London. He is, in fact, in Edinburgh, I believe. Is that correct, Henry?
Or are you somewhere else today? I am indeed, Peter. No, I am in Edinburgh, up here for the week with my lovely wife on our anniversary, and having a very nice time, I should say, as well.
Okay, I'm going to do an impromptu thing here now and ask you to just say one thing, Scottish slang that you've heard in passing during your travels in the last few days. Anything?
Well, we've heard a lot about the wee wild haggis.
The wee wild haggis. Have you tried any haggis, by the way?
There's an absolute epidemic of them bouncing around the streets, devouring people. So, yeah.
Fantastic, mate. Well, good to have you. And thank you for joining us today, mate. And not just saying, I'm on holiday. Don't come anywhere near me. We'll put the podcast off for another week. So I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
So we had a chat, and I suggested that we could talk about common investing mistakes made by private investors, because there seems to be a lot of hubris and a lot of volatility and a lot of chasing and a lot of FOMO and a lack of research going on regarding certain stocks, home and away. And I say home and away, I mean in the UK as well as the US. Certain stocks have been absolutely flying, and certain unloved stocks, no one likes them at the moment. Sentiment has gone against them, so therefore they're very lowly priced and undervalued. Yeah?
Absolutely.
So, Henry, I think maybe the first thing to talk about is the volatility of the markets and what's been happening regarding the markets. A lot of it's been led by Mr. Trump, President Trump. Yeah? And I mentioned to you very, very briefly about soya beans, and you went, you what?
Yeah, I admit, this one hasn't reached Edinburgh yet.
Hasn't reached Edinburgh. There's an ongoing debacle and tariff war, and it's some of it is linked to soybeans, right? So for decades, more than half of the US soybeans went to China.
Ah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And China, regarding what they were saying more recently, in recent months, said, you know what? That's it. We're not going to import any more soybeans now from the US. And obviously that's going to impact US farmers, right? It's been on, off, all kinds of stuff been doing, arguing and going backwards and forwards. And then Donald Trump in his wisdom says, you know what, to hell with it. We are no longer going, this was yesterday, we are no longer going to import cooking oil into the US, right? We're going to start producing cooking oil in the US.
Okay. And
during a 7 minute, I want to say absolute spanking of the US markets, $450 billion was wiped off the US market when he said, we're no longer going to import from China cooking oil. Yeah, 7 minutes, $450 billion was wiped off. And of course, then the markets move on, the volatility is over, the markets go back up, and so on and so forth. So part of the conversation Henry and I wanted to have today was sometimes just letting the market be the market, let the noise and the volatility and the commentary and by all different experts just come and go. And if you've got some quality stocks, fine. If it's impacted for those 7 minutes, fine. But don't panic. Yeah? Would you agree, well, Henry?
Is that story
completely passed you by that, while
totally
you're looking at your face?
I mean, the latest thing I heard out of America was that Donald Trump had said that he was going to increase tariffs on China by 100%. So they were going to go up 200%. And in response The Chinese turned around and went, all right, that's fine. We'll stop exporting any rare earths.
That's the other. That's another conversation entirely.
And,
But
you know,
I
literally
absolutely
within
another.
24 hours, Donald Trump was on social media going, oh, yes, when I said we were going to hike tariffs by another 100%, what I actually meant was we love China and we want to trade with them. And it's not so bad. Please, can we have your rare earth? I mean, you know, I'm all for you know, making policy up on the hoof, as it were. But if you're going to do that, you know, at least, well, I suppose if you're going to think it through, then you're not really making it up on the hoof. But it just seems to me that he's reacting on emotion and the way that he thinks the world is, as opposed to the way the world actually is. And the truth of the matter is that we do depend on China. America depends on China for an awful lot of global trade. You know, and if that were to stop overnight, our economy would look vastly different. You know, we wouldn't have cars, we wouldn't have electronics in the same way, we wouldn't have healthcare in the same way. You know, so it's all very good banging on the table and going, well, we don't want to trade with China, but are you really ready to go back to the 1500s? Because that's sort of where we'd end up if we stopped.
Well, hopefully not that far back, but yeah, we're over reliant. I think there was a mistake made historically by policymakers, looking for the cheapest places to have things manufactured and imported, you know, where we've got various things that go, I don't know how many miles it is round trip to get to the UK, but several thousand, because it's cheaper to manufacture it there and then stick it on a ship and then wait a week for it or 2 weeks for it or whatever, for it to go to a port in the UK to then get to a distribution centre in the UK to then get on the shelves in a supermarket near us. It's like, why couldn't we have just got to the point where we became more and more efficient to actually manufacture some of these things ourselves? So that's the problem, you know. So decades on now, we're trying to roll it back, and it's the cat's out now. The horse's bolted, should I say?
Well, I mean, you know, in principle, I've not really got anything against this idea of re-onshoring. I see no reason at all why Britain can't manufacture cars and clothing and electronics ourselves to a larger extent than we do so now. You know, and I take into account the fact that there is going to be some degree of inefficiency in that. But certainly to have become so dependent on foreign economies for so many major parts of our economic activity seems a little bit daft to me. But when people make these sweeping statements, I will just stop trading with China tomorrow, it screams to me of, you know, falling in love with the way you want the world to be rather than the way it actually is. You know, the example that always sticks out to me when COVID struck, and you remember you couldn't get eggs in supermarkets. It wasn't because chickens were laying less eggs or they'd all suddenly keeled over. It was because the one factory that produced chicken egg boxes, you know, the little cardboard boxes, there's only one of them in the whole of Europe and it couldn't export.
Yeah.
And so that totally snarled up supply chains. You physically couldn't buy the egg cartons to export your eggs anymore. That was why they weren't in supermarkets. Now, to you or I, that sounds absolutely bonkers. But when you are faced with that reality, you have to learn that you can't be an expert on every bit of the global supply chain.
Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, we have a scenario now where everyone on various different platforms are using social media, and they're now not only, well, I think up until a couple of weeks ago, they're all experts on what was going on across the globe regarding a certain war, and now they're experts on tariffs, and yesterday they were experts on soybeans and cooking oil, and next week it'll be something completely different, all because of ChatGPT and other platforms that they're using to go, I'm an expert on this. And no one, you know, even the politicians we've got in the UK and in the US are not experts on everything. So, you know, if you can drill it down and get yourself a good core portfolio of stocks that are diversified, probably the best thing to do. You know, you and I were at the AIC showcase on Friday, yeah, and we were blessed with having loads of fund managers and investment trust managers, private equity, bond specialists, small cap specialists, all talking about different topics and infrastructure included. And all of them are experts in their own way, but they're not experts in every way. Yeah, and they're talking about the challenges that they face over the past 12 months and why a good 50% of their investment trusts are currently sitting at discounts. You know, I think we had two individuals there that whose investment trusts are sitting at a premium. Yeah. But we had Nick Train there, you know, brilliant as he is and brilliant historically as he's been. His portfolio has struggled for now 3 years or so, Henry?
Oh, at least 3 years.
At least
And
3 years.
I think this is the thing. It you can end up falling in love with the story of an investor. And I was struck when he started speaking, and you know, I've never actually seen Nick Train in the flesh before, so that was quite an experience for me. He was actually there on the stage 10 feet away. But one of the things that struck me was that he's been the fund advisor for Fund Smith for 25 years. And so he's built up this fantastic pedigree as being a highly respected, highly performing investor. And yet, the last couple of years, it really has been dire. And you ask yourself, well, are you backing him based on his performance over the last 5 years, as the world currently is, or are you backing him based on what he did 20 years ago?
Absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely, and therein lies the issue, mate. So I think we better just get stuck into this thing we're going to talk about, Henry. And I'll go back to the article I wrote for ShareScope last year. I think it's last year. It feels like an age ago now. And the title, you can find it on the ShareScope website, is Eight Common Investing Mistakes Made by Private Investors. And it starts with a quote from Ken Fisher, the very famous Ken Fisher, and his investing success is two-thirds avoiding mistakes and one-third doing something right. Private investing offers the opportunity for individuals to take control of their finances and even achieve financial freedom. However, without proper knowledge and preparation, private investors can unknowingly make mistakes that hinder their portfolio investment returns. Of course, because we are human, yeah? It is natural for us to make mistakes, and we will be more successful through our continuous learning. To make life a little easier, though, this article is written to have a look at some of the common mistakes that private investors make and provide insights into how to reduce them and even avoid them, ensuring a higher chance of long-term success for your investment journey. And I started with a paragraph, Henry, on overconfidence, and the quote from Daniel Kahneman was overconfidence is a powerful source of illusions, primarily determined by the quality of coherence of the story that you can construct, not by its validity. Now, when we were talking earlier, we were talking about that story, the story stocks, and you've got an example of one that you wanted to share. So should we start there regarding the overconfidence or a stock that's been a story stock for you? And I'll give
Yeah,
another example
absolutely.
of
I
one.
mean, it overconfidence comes in a number of ways, but I've often found that you can have overconfidence in your own analytical abilities. So for me, the big one that sticks out recently will be S4 Capital. The reason it sticks out for me is because I fell in love with this story. It was a digital first marketing agency. They were going to do marketing differently. It was backed by Sir Martin Sorrell, who, as we all know, is the hugely, well, was the hugely well-regarded founder of WPP. I think since founding S4 Capital, he's slightly less well-regarded. But you fall in love with this story and you back your own analytical abilities. You become overconfident when the market's actually giving you something very different. And backed by Martin Sorrell, S4 Capital rapidly acquired a whole raft of businesses, made huge promises about getting to, I think it was $1 billion in turnover. And it bought business after business after business to get to this $1 billion, but it couldn't make a profit. And the more businesses it acquired, the more revenue it made, but also the bigger the losses became. And so the bigger the losses became, the more it needed to borrow or the more stocks it needed to issue. And so there was no profit backing this thing. Now, the shares soared on this idea that it was going to become, you know, the next WPP. But then soon after, the profit warnings turned up. And then we had accounting issues. And all the way through, I was telling myself, well, don't worry, I know best. I'm Henry. You know, I know what I've done. I've done my research. And actually, you know, a period after buying it was maybe 18 months, I ended up topping up my position and averaging down. And the shares continued to slide. And I remember I held on for another, it was probably another 6 months or so after I topped up. But the main thing that got me was just this lack of self-awareness that I had about, the market's telling you something very different to what your own analysis is. It is that, like you say, overconfidence.
Indeed, I think we were both in there for a period of time, and I think we've spoken about this a couple of times on the pod. And I think I was on holiday the first time I got pied. I used the word pied by it, and I was like, "No, I know best. Similar to you, I've done my research on it. I'm going to carry on holding it." And then almost on the anniversary of it happened again, and I was like, "I've got to get out of this. I've got to get out." And I walked away. And the share price has continued down. I think the problem you and I both had was that surely it can't go wrong because it's a Martin Sorrell's vehicle. And he's got this 30, 40-year history of being supreme in the marketing advertising space. He will get this right. Yeah. Other people have bought into his financial engineering model of I'm going to buy your company for 100 million, but I'm going to give you 50% of that in shares at, I don't know, three or four times the premium what the share price was at the time. So therefore it's got to come right. And still to this day, we're still looking and going, he's not got this right, has he?
He's
You
really not.
know? And in essence, Henry, I think whilst we blame ourselves for having overconfidence in S4 Capital, actually the main storyteller of overconfidence in the stock was and is Sir Martin Sorrell himself. You know,
I mean, there is that whether there's any doubts privately that he has expressed publicly, there has been nothing but chest thumping, and it's me, it'll work, I know what I'm doing, the market's got it wrong. And that behavior, I see a lot of that from Matt Moulding over at the Hut Group. And he pens, I mean, they're wonderfully well written, don't get me wrong. He pens these enormous pieces on LinkedIn all about how the London Stock Exchange is out to get him and the Financial Times is out to get him. And if only people really understood how much he'd sacrificed, the business would be on a 10 times valuation to what it is today. There's no sort of examination of, hang on a minute, I'm just losing money hand over fist. Maybe that's why the share price is cratering.
That is true. And the other element that he throws as well is that if you don't look after me, and if you don't value my shares or my company well enough, I'm going to take it lock, stock and barrel and go and list it in the US, and I'll get a supreme valuation there. And that may not happen. On admission, Henry, I've traded in and out and sideways regarding this stock, and only recently went in for a trade at 27 pence. It got absolutely lampooned with the results that came out earlier this week, and the share price still went up. And they're currently at 44/45 pence.
Oh, check you out.
I've got a target of 50p on the stock. And when it gets to 50p, it'll almost be doubled if it gets there. If it doesn't and it drops back down below sub 40, I'll then get out. But for me, the issue is that they've just turned profitability. If you look at the massinizations, I can't even say the word now. The end of financial engineering is a better word to use. Financial engineering of their numbers, they've just turned profitability, right? However, if you look at the numbers and you look at all the different adjustments, it's still a bit foggy there, right? But he's going to be using that element of profitability to do some more financial engineering as to what he does next. It's just a trade for me. I'm not invested in it. I've done this a couple of times with it. But yeah. It's an element of overconfidence. And I think what happened was when he did the roadshow for the IPO, it was sold and marketed supremely well. And hence the reason why the share price went as high as it did. But now it's a penny stock, essentially. You know, and will it get to £1? I think he wants a £1 a share valuation, really. And whether or not he then takes it to the US or not, I don't know. But he needs far more profitability. And far more revenues being driven from the company to get to that. So those are great examples regarding overconfidence. I think the other one I would add, and I'm not going to get through all of the topics regarding the article I did, but The other one we spoke about, and we have spoken about historically, which I've nipped back into again, is DGI9. And again, the company were buying things for 100 million, 100 million here and 50 million there. And now they can't give away those infrastructure things that they purchased. But yeah, all I'm reading everywhere is X, Y, and Z is spending billions on infrastructure here. And this company is coming into the UK and going to build infrastructure here. I'm like, well, just buy theirs. Buy their infrastructure. You know, take it off their hands at NAV if you can and get the share price above 10p and up to 15p. But they can't give it away. So we'll slowly wind it down. Well, of course you will, because you can't sell anything because you've bought it as overpriced assets, and other assets are far better than it now. So again, overconfident management, who sold a good story? Yeah.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Well, I think that leads me on to another basic failing, actually, of investors chasing yield without understanding risk.
Yeah, that was a yield one. Yeah.
Because I invested in DGI9 partly on the story, you know, investing in digital assets, but partly for yield. And you and our audience will know I like income stocks. I always have. I won't apologize for it. I do like my dividends. But chasing yield, you know, the temptation to buy whatever's yielding 7, 8, 9% and assuming you've struck gold because of it is actually a really risky thing to do.
Absolutely.
You know, I got caught out with DGI9. I got caught out with Vodafone was another one. Looked like it was offering a really generous dividend of, I think it got up as high as 9% at one point. I might not be entirely accurate on that. Yeah. But it cut its payout because there was no profit backing the yield. It was sort of an illusion. You know, you've got Direct Line, which was, I think, one that you owned at one point. Similar story, high yield, but then they had a really bad underwriting year and had to suspend it altogether. And that's where investors go wrong, because they look at the quoted yield, and the quoted yield is based on the last payout. Now, you can get a forecast yield, but it might not be covered. And those yields can be too good to be true. You know, high yields, more often than not, signal that the market doesn't believe the dividend is sustainable. And investors fall into this trap, not only of overconfidence, but of, you know, chasing things that look too good to be true. There's a reason that income trusts don't pay out 9% a year. You know, they're not invested in junk assets. They're invested in safe, sustainable blue chip funds and firms that pay out a more sustainable 3 or 4%. And sometimes that can nudge over 5, but by the time you're getting up to double digits, you know, the market's screaming, watch out, we've got problems here.
Absolutely. And this is the reason why you and I often talk about and stress to people regarding yield to watch out, because it is one of them where A, it gets cut, or B, they come out with really difficult news and then say, oh, we're going to pause the dividend. Yeah, not going to hold it for you. And then when things are good, we're going to pay you double the dividend that we said we're going to give it. We're going to pause it, and the pause could go on forever. Yeah, it doesn't come. I've got some high yielding stocks in my portfolio, and I'm not sure if you've got one or two of them as well, but they are Legal & General at the moment and Aberdeen. They're quite substantial yielding at present, forecast yield as well, but they're backed up by being profitable companies.
Exactly. Yeah?
And I was buying them when they were 9% and a little bit shy of that yield, but the run loved, and I was hoping that the company would recover profitability, carry on paying the dividend, and also the share price would increase. Now both of them have done that, but there's others that I picked out in the past which I've gone, yeah, nice yield, I'll buy that, and I'll get paid whilst I wait. I've waited a little while, the yield has gone down because they've reduced it. And the share price has gone down too. So you get a double hit, don't you? You know, of negativity for your portfolio. And there's one thing I dislike, folks, right? is paying a company to own the shares. I want the company to pay me to own the shares, right? And by that, I mean, I want them to pay me a nice dividend, and I want them to show 3, 4, 5, 10% growth every year, so that if I've got a 5% divvy and a 5% growth, I've got a 10% that I'm compounding each year on that particular investment I've made in that individual stock.
Well, you look at, I mean, Legal & General, we both own. I've talked about Chesnara before, but if you move away from the financials for the moment, because, you know, they are a little bit of a black box for some of our audience, you've even got household names like GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, which is on a 5% yield at the moment. Now, that's had a real turnaround story. Their forecasts are looking really positive. You know, it's a pharmaceuticals business, so it is largely dependent on the outcomes of drug trials in the pipeline. So they develop new treatments. If those treatments are passed by trial boards and have the results that are expected and are passed for sale to the general public, then generally speaking, earnings explode because there are new revenue streams that are coming online. And where with pharmaceuticals businesses, you can have historic earnings that then weaken if the pipeline weakens. The reverse can also be true. And GSK, to me at the moment, looks like a business where the pipeline is getting stronger and stronger. You know, it's a business that is backed by genuine earnings power. And that's the sort of time that you ought to be looking at higher yields, because historically, GlaxoSmithKline has yielded, you know, sort of 2 to 4%. So it's currently trading slightly below its average range in terms of share price, and therefore slightly above its average range in terms of yield. And that might be an interesting opportunity for listeners to go and have a look around and buy a quality business that's got potential to strengthen in the future.
Yeah, it's one of them that I've liked on and off. I think the last time I had it, I exited it with regards to the ongoing overhead litigation issues that might come from one particular drug that they've gone, which escapes me at the minute. So I've just stayed away from it, Henry. But I think it's been in a trading range of £14 to £16. And the other thing that I'm a little bit cautious of is the fact that their CEO has decided to walk away from the company as well. So I'm wondering whether that's a push or a I've been here long enough now situation. So I'm a bit conscious that is there some maneuverings going on there with regards to the reason why Emma Walmsley decided to walk away. It's a huge company, yeah. It's the number two pharma company in the UK. Why walk away? Is there something underlying there, or does she feel like she's done as much as she possibly can? You know,
I mean, she has been there a number of years.
Absolutely.
You know, I think from what I know, I think she's walked away of her own accord. I don't think she's been pushed. Share price has been underwhelming, but the, like I say, the drugs development pipeline has strengthened.
Yeah.
And I think she was brought in as a bit of a turnaround candidate.
Right.
Things are going wrong. We want you to get the ship level and going in the right direction. And I think broadly speaking, she's done that and therefore feels now's the time to move on to the next opportunity. So that didn't flag too much of an alarm bell with me. But like you say, you never really know what's going on behind closed doors, and it's just as possible that she has been pushed.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's not the case, and I'm hoping that she's not been pushed, like you say, and I'm hoping she turns up somewhere else in the UK rather than going to the US, because there's lots of companies that are in the FTSE 350 that could do with a financial genius as herself to take the reins of those sort of companies and give it some catalyst going forward. We don't need less good money lead managers and CEOs. We need more of that sort of quality. So it will be a loss to the industry, I think, if she ends up just going to the sidelines for too long. Right. So Henry, one of the topics within this is failure to undertake sufficient research.
Yeah. We can't accuse you of that.
No, you can't accuse me of that. But look, but I think the thing what we've got, Henry, is that, you know, each morning there are individuals that write posts and share information and get up early in the morning and put RNS information out. Some of them good, some of them bad. And a lot of people will take that as seeing these individuals, certain individuals are experts at what they're saying and all the rest of it. And they'll say, this stock or this RNS is fantastic, the company is fantastic, and people will buy into that. Yeah. Equally, some people will say, this RNS, this loss-making company is a load of tosh, da-da-da-da, company is poor, da-da-da-da, say negative things about it. And other people go, oh, therefore, the stock can't be any good because two or three of those individuals have said X, Y, and Z, and that's all the research they've done. Yeah? And as an accordance, they miss out on some opportunities by going to do their digging and the research themselves. The quote that I've used here is from, and I need to pronounce this correctly, is from an individual called Marston Bates. Wink, wink. Research is the process of going up alleys to see if they're blind. Yeah. So sometimes you've got to spend the time going down the alley to see if it's a blind alley.
I like that. I've not heard that one before.
Yeah. You've got to do the research. May waste some time. But by doing the research yourself, you have the confidence, not overconfidence, the confidence to know that this is got a good CEO, CFO, it's profitable, it pays a dividend, it's not your stuff, Henry. It's not got high percentage of debt. Yeah? It's got some cash just in case things go a bit wobbly. Yeah? So true diligent investing starts with undertaking enough research to understand the company, yeah, or the investment trust, or the fund. Its business, its fundamental strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and potential under-researched catalysts. What we should be looking for, if it's undervalued, is why is it undervalued? Is it a temporary thing? Is it a long-term thing? And what could be the catalyst to get this share price going up? I think you on the last pod, Henry, mentioned Serabi Gold.
Yeah.
Yeah? I'm not sure if you held a stock or not.
I don't own it, no.
But it came out with additional news this week, and the share price has gone up again.
Yeah.
Yeah? And had we been doing deep enough research, I was asked a question September last year regarding which mining companies do I think, which gold mining companies. And me being me, I just did a bit of research, a little bit. And I said, Endeavour Mining. Yeah. It's gone up 100% since. Have I done any further research on it and did I buy it? No. Yeah. But Serabi Gold was another one that, you know, you do enough research, you might go up a couple of blind alleys looking at gold stocks a year ago. If you had purchased them a year ago, most of the gold stocks this month have gone up 10% each. The past 12 months, they've gone up 50, 60, 100, 200%. But you have to go up some blind alleys.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, that is very true. And I think the matter of doing research, I mean, I publish RNS commentary, but on shares that I hold. So I've got an account with the London Stock Exchange who send me email updates on my portfolio. So you can create a virtual portfolio and you can say to the London Stock Exchange, every morning, please send me any RNSs linked to the companies in my portfolio. And so you'll get these through. And I will usually do a little prosy of them on Twitter and Blue Sky, and they will not usually be much more complicated than revenue up or down, earnings per share up or down, debt up or down. And usually Matt takes the mickey out of me for this one, but I continue to hold. And I think you said that must be the most commonly used thing you say on Twitter. But I always feel a little bit obliged to add that, so that people know that I am talking my own book. I think that's an important thing to say. But what I don't do when I put those out is give an in-depth commentary. Occasionally, I will post a little thread, and it's very rarely, you know, a handful of times a year, where I'll go into what I think this update means for the company. If revenue is up, why? You know, if profit is up, why? Where do I think it's going to go in the next 6 months? What's going on with the debt levels? What am I concerned about? And so I would hope that anybody that does read those, if they see a business that I've, you know, put a lot of green ticks against, that they'll go and take the time to do their own research, like you said, and come to their own conclusions about why I hold this or why I, you know, don't hold it. You know, and this is one that it lends itself to calming your emotions during volatility. So if you have piggybacked on what you think is my research and you see I own Sarabi Gold, and all of a sudden I come out with an RAS with a load of red crosses against it, revenue down, earnings per share down, debt up, cross, cross, cross. And you go, oh, right, well, Henry doesn't like this, so I'll sell it. How would you feel if 3 months later the share was up, like you say, 100%? You'd feel like a total fool. Because you've not done your own research, you've not come to your own conclusion. And, you know, that's where it's so easy to confuse volatility with either risk or reward. Volatility is just the market's reflection of what they think the company is worth. It's not necessarily accurate. You know, when markets fall, it doesn't mean the company's, you know, going bankrupt. And when markets shoot up, it doesn't necessarily mean that the company's the next Amazon. It's a short-term reflection, and you've got to be able to respond within that accordingly.
Absolutely spot on. And to add the quote that you would use for that, Henry, regarding your research and what you're actually writing about each morning, is that you're reiterating Peter Lynch's quote, know what you own and know why you own it.
Very true. Very true.
Because we have essentially trading updates half year and full year, right? So essentially you have 4 points other than contract updates and new wins for contracts, etc. You have 4 points of reference each year where the higher quality companies will come out and tell you how well they are doing. Yeah. Are they reiterating the standpoint that you've got, that this is something to maintain a stake in, an investment in? Or are they actually saying to me, there's a temporary blip, beware, the share price is going to have a wobble for the next 2 or 3 months, but bear with us because at the end of this year, we'll be fine. Or actually, are they saying, you know, we said to you in July that everything's fine, but we're now in October, things aren't fine. Yeah. And something's gone wrong. You and I, on occasion, Henry, have had it where someone's come out and said, the financial accounting is irregular. And we've taken a deep intake of breath and we've gone, I'm out. I'm done.
I hate it. I hate it.
You know, it's one of the things that we both agree on. We're like, and then you see the CFO usually, the first one, walking the plank.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I'm getting out, I'm out of Dodge. I'm leaving this one. If the CFO is gone and then whoever else is coming having a look at it, and then the CEO goes, you know you're in for pain for a long time. And no matter how good the company was 6 months ago, a year ago, you're better off just leaving it alone for a good while. The recovery could be substantial. Yeah. And if the irregularities are really severe, the company could actually just, you know.
Well, this is something that I really liked about Nick Train's talk at the AIC. Yeah. So Nick was talking about a number of holdings he's got. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of fund managers talking their own book, but it's part of the reason we like listening to them. And he was talking about businesses like Diageo and RELX. And RELX is one that I love. Started out, you know, as a publishing business. It's, you know, 150 years old or something. Produced scientific periodicals, paper magazines. But now has a hugely diverse business with one of the major revenue streams that they've got is risk analytics. And I'd got no idea. I still thought of them as a publishing business, to be honest. Mm. And he was saying, you know, this business has become a genuine global contender in the data analytics and risk management space. Why would you not want to own a piece of this? This is a fantastic business. One of the other businesses he was talking about was Diageo, which I don't own. And the reason he was talking about Diageo was because if you've looked at the share price, it's fallen off a cliff. It's down something like 50% over 3 years. It's just woeful.
Yeah.
And he didn't try to defend that. He said, you know, we've lost 50% of our holding in this over 3 years. But by the same token, Diageo also owns the Guinness brand. And if you look at the volume of Guinness sold since the brewery was founded in the 1800s to today, it's just gone up and up and up and up, absolutely meteoric rise. And he said this is one of the strongest, most enduring brands in the world. It's sold in every bar around the world. Why would you not want to have that in your portfolio? Now, the reason that I mention these is not because I think Rolex or Diageo are the things to go out and buy tomorrow, but because this is a man that very clearly has done his research. He understands the history behind what he owns. He understands where he thinks they're going, and he understands the quality of the management teams inside these businesses. And therefore, when you or I look at them and go, well, okay, over the last 3 years, they've not done very well. He's able to go, yes, but over the last 20, they've done spectacularly. And I believe over the next 20, they will continue to do spectacularly, even if they've had a blip for a year or two.
Yeah. Two thoughts, Henry, on this one. I own Rolex. My concern with Rolex is the fact that it's been a little bit of a laggard in the data space, in the growth space, for a little while now. And the reason why I bought it was I thought it was going to have a catalyst soon. And that catalyst could come in the next 3 to 6 months. And if it does, it will get another re-rating. Or I think they will start to promote themselves a bit more as to what they do. You very rarely see an interview with somebody from Rolex talking about Rolex.
I never
those sort of companies which we've spoken about before. It's a UK company. It's fantastic at what it does. It does not promote itself.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that will change going forward. The Diageo side of it, they've got lots of great brands. The one synonymous with Diageo is Guinness. The growth sector for that is overseas. And actually what they're selling is non-alcoholic Guinness.
It's very good. It is very, very good.
Says Henry, the drinker of non-alcoholic Guinness. But that's one of the growth things for it. Its spirits business is still doing okay. The share price is woefully neglected. They've just got rid of their CEO, I believe, who was a female. Was it?
I didn't know that.
Was it? Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I didn't know.
That CEO has walked. Either CEO or CFO. I might have got it wrong. Somebody will correct me on that. So they've underperformed for a significant number of years. If I was to do my intrinsic values, you know, some of the parts sort of analysis, it's worth 20 plus every all day long, right? And it's currently at what, 15, 16 pounds ish, right? So 20, 25 pounds is what it's worth. But who is out there in the larger global sphere who's going to come and bid at 20, 30% premium for what it's currently valued at? There's not many in that game that want to buy a brewing company, a spirits company, but there might well be somebody else. I think what will happen is that certain aspects of the branding regarding Diageo, if it's dissimilar, not this very similar to Unilever, all that aspects of it might be broken up and put into different segments, you know, and therefore that value could be released going forward. But I'm not sure when. I'm not in a rush to buy Diageo. I'll carry on drinking it like you, Henry, and I might have the alcoholic versions of stuff come crimbo, including some of the spirits. But I'm not sure what the next catalyst will be for the price.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk
for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
No, I'm not sure either. And, you know, there is a little bit of fund manager not doing very well and therefore having to defend his track record, which I am cognizant of. He's not exactly going to stand up and say, yeah, sorry, I've done terribly. I've got no idea why it's going to turn around. Just trust me. That wouldn't sound particularly convincing. So I do recognise that there is an element of talking your own book with him. But by the same token, if you've done your research and you know, it's not being overconfident. There is a fine line between overconfidence and having done your own research. But I think it is important, like you said, to do your own research, to come up with your own thesis and to know why you own. You say Diageo is worth £20 a share. The market currently disagrees with you. One of you will be right.
Eventually. Okay. One of the other topics in the article, Henry, was market timing. And this is about the noise, sometimes neglecting to do the research, but also saying this stock can't go any higher. This stock can't go any higher. This stock can't go any, and it just carries on going higher. I want to give an example of a stock, Henry, that's in the US, right? And I will quote Peter Lynch again here. It says, far more money has been lost by investors preparing for corrections or trying to anticipate corrections than has been lost in corrections themselves. Okay. Now, you're going to hate these metrics, Henry, but I'll tell you the metrics anyway, then tell you the stock. Okay. This stock is up 1,645% in the past year. Okay. This stock, Henry, has got zero revenue. You heard that correctly. This stock, Henry, is currently valued at $25.7 billion.
Ooh, what's this then?
I'll read out what it does. Developer of advanced nuclear reactors. You see, hot topic. Mission to provide clean, reliable, affordable energy through the deployment of a next generation fast fission technology and recycling nuclear waste. You ever heard of this company, Henry? No? It is called Oklo, O-K-L-O, ticker symbol O-K-L-O. Yeah, and it's been advancing from zero to hero because of it's developing advanced nuclear reactors.
But
It's got zero revenue because it's all in projected what it's going to do going forward.
That is scary.
So lots of people have gone in there and traded it and bought in and traded it and da-da-da-da. And it's now currently sitting with a valuation of $25.7 billion. Fueled by investors' excitement over nuclear power's role in powering AI data centers. Key milestones include breaking ground in its first plant in Idaho in October and selection of for a U.S. Department of Energy nuclear fuel program. Yeah. So basically, you've got individuals saying, you know, this, it ain't over yet. Yeah, it ain't over yet. And it's got further to go. And when all the revenue starts to kick in, it will justify its $25 billion. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we've got individuals that will poo-poo any UK stock whose revenue are low or any stock that's a loss maker. Yeah. In the US, the hubris is it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. We don't care if it's got no revenues right now, not just low revenues, no revenues. Yeah. There are only probably 30 or 40 UK companies in the whole of the UK listed wise that are more valuable than Oklo right now. Which I find staggering. How can a zero revenue company, somebody will tell me there's got £100,000 worth of revenue somewhere. Maybe they've got $100,000 of revenue. but it's currently worth $25.7 billion. And it's got
that is, I mean, that is just staggering. And I think, you know, I put an article up on, well, I say I put an article up, I put a comment up on LinkedIn earlier this week. I don't often comment about investing activity on LinkedIn all that often. But you'll have noticed there's a whole thing going on with the AI economy at the moment and circular funding.
Yes, we did talk about this. Yeah, the Marx Brothers sketch. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So ChatGPT buys $100 billion worth of NVIDIA chips in order to build data centers. NVIDIA then pays $100 billion to Oracle to build data centers to power ChatGPT. ChatGPT then gets $100 billion order from Oracle for processing services and puts that money into Anthropic AI. Anthropic then goes back to NVIDIA and buys another $100 billion worth of chips. I mean, you see where this is going. I you know, those aren't precise steps, but you know, you've got $100 billion just going between half a dozen companies. There's no actual new money going into the ecosystem. And I just want to warn investors a little bit here that these story stocks that that some people are piling money into, please just be very, very, very careful with them. They might go up 5, 10, 20 times, and maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe you'll get your money out of them. But I have a scary suspicion that an awful lot of these are going to collapse in ruin. You know, please just be very, very careful. I wrote an article. One of the most popular articles I've ever written on my blog is an article called "The House of Cards That Is Tesla's Balance Sheet." And I don't know why this is one of the most popular articles I've ever written, but month after month, it comes up in my top 10 pages on Google Analytics for the Ethical Entrepreneur. The article was written in 2019, and it was all about how Tesla was going to collapse in a heap. Because it had very little revenue. It wasn't massively, I don't think it had ever turned a profit at that point. And this was all going to end in tears for investors. And since then, the share price has gone up even more.
Multifold more.
You know, does that mean I was wrong in 2019 about this not being a massively stable investment? I don't believe so. I still believe in the long run, this is going to go to zero. It just hasn't yet.
I'll disagree with you on one count here, Henry. I do not believe, unless something catastrophic happens, that Tesla will go to zero. I think there's a significant overvaluation. I think at the current market cap, it's probably worth 10 of the largest manufacturers out there. It's probably worth the same amount as them, if not more. That doesn't make any sense to me when they sell probably a tenth of all those manufacturers' cars. Are you with me? So there's a hype value in there. There's a cult value in there. There's a it belongs to Elon Musk value in there. All that premium is in there. Should it be worth more than Ford? Probably not.
Ford, Hyundai, Mercedes.
Absolutely, all of those things, and Porsche. So all of those things going on. I'll give you another. So going back to the company I was talking about, it's projected to have, I think, Henry, 100K of projected revenues in 2029, right? 4 years ago. Another one I'll give you regarding things that have just gone a bit too strongly is a quantum computing company. Now, I wish I'd got involved in this one. I had a quantum computing company, but I chose the wrong one, right? This one, Henry, is up in the past 12 months. It's gone from 92 cents per share to $53 per share in 12 months, right? It is up 6,497% in 12 months. And the company I'm talking about, ticker symbol is RGTI. Rigetti Computing Inc. is a full stack quantum computing company. The company operates in quantum computing computers over the cloud and serves corporate enterprise government research clients through its Rigetti Quantum Cloud Services platform. etc., etc. Now, this is now caught up in that fast track, doesn't matter what the revenues are, etc., etc., etc. Gross profits of this company, Henry, do you want to guess?
Oh, peanuts.
18 billion market cap, 3.2 million gross profit.
Oh dear. I mean, yeah. Just to put that in context for a moment, you know, part of my job as a bid manager is to bring in revenue for Gallagher. It's what I'm measured on. We need to win bids. Bids have a monetary value attached to them. This would be like me getting paid $10 million a year to bring in £10,000 worth of revenue. I'm bringing in revenue, but I'm hardly washing my face, am I?
I think you should start calling yourself Oclo or Rigetti Computing, mate.
You're telling me. I think I'll go down to the license office. I'll get a name change.
And list yourself on the New York Stock
Exchange
and the
Henry.
NASDAQ. Yeah. So their revenue is 8 million at the moment, Henry.
Shocking.
17, 18 billion market cap.
That is just shocking.
Yeah. Will it go higher? Will it become the Tesla of the future? You know, me mocking both of those companies because they're 25 and 18 billion market cap with almost zero revenue. Happens in the US. We have no companies worth 10 billion or more in the
we
UK.
We don't, but I think that's a reflection of, if I'm perfectly honest, I think that is more a reflection of British sensibilities. And I use sensibilities, you know, not in its true sense of, you know, tastes, but we are quite grounded investors. I feel like the Americans sometimes completely lose the plot when it comes to investing. I mean, you look at the forward price to earnings ratio of a company like Palantir. It would have to grow its earnings, you know, 1,000% a year every year for the next 10 years to get even vaguely close to a reasonable valuation.
Another good example, Henry.
You know,
a good example there.
Now, bubbles, and I do call that a bubble. Bubbles can last an awful long time. They do last an awful long time, and the history of markets is filled with them. But as investors, it is our job not just to participate in bubbles and hope for the best, but to actively, you know, try to avoid them, to invest in reasonable long-term opportunities that can make money, to protect our capital, not just to gamble on what we think is going to go up 1,000% next year because the guy next door will pay us 1,000% more for it. That's not investing. That is, you know, you might as well just go down to the casino and put it all on black.
Exactly. I'm trying to dig out here the example that you gave earlier regarding revenues and stuff and go back to Diageo, but I can't find it. I think the full year results for 2023 were 20 billion. Now, I'd guesstimate that 20 billion of revenue, that the market cap currently for Diageo is probably sub 20 billion. Yeah, given the fall from grace and the valuation of it. I could be wrong. Somebody correct me on that. But what's the current revenue for Diageo? I'm not sure if you've got access to anything there, Henry, but it's going to be up there in the billions.
So they're at about 2x revenue. They're at 39 billion, according to a quick search.
Right. So 2x revenue. So that's 78 billion in revenue for the whole year. I'm not sure that's accurate or not. But what the point I'm trying to make is you cannot give Diageo shares away despite them having that revenue and profits.
Real money. And bear in mind as well, not just revenue, but actual profit.
Actual profits.
Large, established, profitable conglomerate with some of the best brands in the world under the hood, but you'd rather go and put your money into an AI company. And bear in mind, quantum computing, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm yet here a valid use case for quantum computing that's actually being applied in a real life scenario outside of a laboratory.
And I asked Stephen Yu that question at the Investor Summit as to quantum computing, et cetera, et cetera, and when those are going to come through, and could NVIDIA win in that space because they've basically tried to do a land grabbing in that space as well. And to cut a long story short, I think he was saying basically that the revenues and the possibility for quantum computers are still a few years, politely, a good few years away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, there you go. You've got an £17-18 billion company in that regard, Henry. Do you want to talk about another company? I'm conscious of the time and trying to get you to go to your to where you need to get to, Henry.
Well, I've not got another company, but before we go, I'm going to pull a slight left step on you here, Peter. So bear with me. I've got a question for you, if you'll give me a minute.
I do hate it when you do this to me. Go on.
You're going to like
this. Unscripted, unrehearsed, and I'm like, ah.
Do you know, as I'm in Scotland, I've been asking around, but do you know why wild haggis never become top investors?
I'm going to say because they've got no skin in the game, because it's a joke.
No. It is a joke, but not a very good one. The wild haggis never become top investors because every time they hear someone mentioning a bull market, they think he's just a really angry Highland cow and they run for the hills. So they never get round to buying any shares. They're too busy avoiding imaginary stampedes.
Good, 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 good. I love that. Love that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Right. The last bit I'm going to add in, I'm going to talk about Memphis at the end of it, Henry. We've already touched on it slightly. I'm going to reference a stock here because I do like the company, but I'm concerned about other people, catching it a bit late here. And that is fear of missing out, Henry. Yeah. We've got a couple of minutes. I'm going to let you go. Right. And that fear of missing out, as we use in the market, is FOMO. Right. And the reference point that I've used here is a very famous song by a group from back in the day, before Henry was even born, I think. No, I think he might have been born around that time. And the group was called Public Enemy. And the song was, Henry, do you know the song? The song was Don't Believe the Hype. Don't Believe the Hype. You remember that song?
No.
Right. No, you're going to have to play that before you go and leave Edinburgh, but not on a loudspeaker. You get thrown out of the country. So, and I'm not saying don't believe the hype in this regard. I'm just saying that you have to be careful when people are talking up stocks. Yeah. We talked about the storytelling earlier on about it. And the reason I'm talking about this particular stock is that it's become a bit of a favorite of late in the past couple of months. And it's, I think globally, it's the number four podcaster company. Is a platform that I use to promote and publish the pod on. And the company is called Audio Boom Group, Henry.
Oh, I've
heard 110, 115 million market cap company. But the shares were a lonely £1.85 at its low, 52-week low. It was sub £3 in July. Then lots of talk was going on around it. Then there came some articles saying, someone's going to come and bid for it. Share price went from sub £3 up to 7.5. Today came out with some news. Actually, record data, record metrics, really positive. But the underlying thing that was said by the company was that no one's come to speak to us or look into buying the company. There is no bid. And at the last look, it may have changed slightly. The share price was down 9%, down to £5.60. Now, a lot of individuals are buying this company at £5/£6 with a view that any takeover by anybody would be at £10, £11 or £12. Now, the reason why I'm saying fear of missing out is that there is no guarantees with takeovers. Until the company says that there is a takeover, any speculation about there being a takeover is noise. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying don't believe the hype of other people. Listen to the company. Yeah. Great company, great platform. Audio Boom is growing, record revenues. But if you're buying it on speculation from others about a takeover, going to be at, you know, is it, I think the low was 185, as I said earlier, at almost 6-7 times that, it's rare that happens in the space of 12 months. Yeah. So, that's all I wanted to share. Have you looked at Audio Boom or seen anything in traction regarding Audio
Boom? I've heard of it. I have heard of it. It's never really interested me. It's been a bit of one of those businesses where I go, well, I don't really see what the point of it is, but clearly the market disagrees. But You know, I think
the point
most
of it is where we put our podcast, Henry. That's the point of it, mate.
Well, yes,
and
but
lots of
also
other
on
people
YouTube,
use it.
which I think is far better because you get to see our pretty faces. So, you know, the most of the mistakes we've talked about, chasing yield, chasing stories, you know, panicking and selling a great business, it all boils down to one thing, doesn't it? You know, emotion over discipline. Yeah, the market, it's got a funny way of
emotion psychology. Yeah, agreed.
Well, it just teaches us the same lessons over and over and over again. But if you study the right examples and you start to recognize these patterns, then hopefully you start to see what quality really looks like. And a bit like Nick Train, when you have a year or two that's not so good, you can go, well, that's fine, I can afford that because for the 23 years prior to this, I did spectacularly well. You know, and that's the thing about long-term investing. It's not about hype and excitement. It's about endurance. It's about staying the course. It's about having cash generation and well-managed businesses and those dividends that get paid out year after year and letting time do the heavy lifting for you.
Brilliantly, brilliantly, brilliantly said, Henry. And I will not reference and say anything more to that, but very well said. Long-term, buy quality, buy enduring companies, as was said in the investment showcase, AIC showcase, resilient companies, enduring companies. Yeah. Right. Last bit here, Henry, and then we can let you go for your caviar on toast, I think is what you're having tonight, isn't it? We're just going to have a quick little update here regarding the Memphis fundraise and how brilliant you guys, ladies and gents, have been. Another donation since the last pod. And this time it's another donation from a child of the 70s. That's an individual on the platform of X. And his quote was, "Hi, Peter and Henry, just a small donation to thank you both again for the fantastic content you regularly produce on the podcast. Grateful as ever. Cheers, Neil." And Neil donated £30 and £7.50 gift aid. So thank you ever so much for that, Neil. Really appreciate it by Henry and I and the Memphis team and the children that you are going to positively impact. That takes our total to £3,822. Just shy of £1,800 is what we need to find between now and December 31st. And that will enable us to add to the individuals that can come in to Memphis and provide specialist education and employment skills and nurture young disabled people into getting onto the employment ladder. So every £10 that helps us get, you know, half an hour, another hour, for a young person to be skilled up to hopefully get to a stage where they've got financial independence and gainful employment in their own right. That's the whole point of this particular fundraise that we're doing. So if you can help and make a donation, please, 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 please do so. And you can do that at www.justgiving.com/page/Peter Higgins. And you can find the Memphis Just Giving page just there. Henry, that's us done, mate.
Spectacular. A pleasure as always, Peter.
We've got other stocks. I will leave them for another day. But we've covered a lot of yards there. I'm hoping other people don't make the mistakes that Henry have made and I have made and become better investors than Henry and I have been. Not sure what else to add there, Henry. What do you think?
I'm very pleased with that. And I think ultimately, guys, it is about just being a little bit cautious and being a little bit skeptical. And I say this often, but I don't think I can say it enough. Nobody will ever care more about your money and your investments than you will. Do not delegate responsibility to others. Not to me, not to Peter, not to your fund manager, not to your pension provider. Nobody should care more about protecting your capital than you do. If you take the time, you will do well. You know, but if you abdicate responsibility, you will get hurt in time. So remember, discipline, discipline, discipline.
Absolutely. And you, Henry, location, location, location. Enjoy Edinburgh. I will see you next week, hopefully in London at some stage. And thank you again for taking the time and give my love and a big hug to Verity for sparing you for an hour and a half. Lots of love to you both. And see you in, well, I'll see you on here in 2 weeks' time, but I'll see you hopefully before then. All right, mate. Thank you
Thanks
ever
a
so
lot,
much,
Peter.
mate. Lots of love. Take care. God bless you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.